Hello, boils and ghouls. It's your old pal, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And guess what, kiddies? You are now tuned in to PBD Horror Podcast. Pleasant screams.
Hey, what's going on? You're now tuned in to the PVD Horror Podcast. I'm Brandon, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dave. Today, we have a special guest. He's a director, editor, producer, who is best known for his 2017 film, Tragedy Girls. Joining us today is Tyler McIntyre. We are going to talk about his new film, It's a Wonderful Knife, which is a Shudder and RLJE Films, which is set to hit theaters on November 10th, 2023. It will stream on Shudder, AMC+, and everywhere else you rent movies at a later date. Tyler, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
No problem. So Tyler, looking at all your projects you have created over the years, what inspired you to become a filmmaker?
Whoa. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a big question. I mean, I definitely grew up like loving movies and watching movies. And, I used to draw a lot when I was a kid, too. Mm-hmm. And so then eventually I started, you know, taking pictures and stuff like that. And then eventually started making movies like, you know, back when we used to have like VHS. Cameras shot directly to VHS, and sort of did that kind of off and on growing up, and then eventually when I was in high school, there was this like teachers' strike, and all of the teachers went on strike, and we got about 6 weeks off from school, and like that first day of that strike, I like walked over to my best friend John's house and was like, we need to make a movie right now because we have like time, you know, like, and it's like a free summer, you know, and we were like, but we don't know how long this is gonna last, we gotta do it really quickly. So we like wrote something that day, started shooting that night, and then just like made this like really long, like 30 minute kind of action comedy a film, and then that was just like it for us. Like we started showing people and they responded well to it, and then it's been sort of straight on till morning. We started making short films, and then the projects get bigger and bigger, and eventually I was able to move to Los Angeles and go to film school, and was fortunate to be able to make a living as an editor for a number of years, and found some good mentors, and then eventually got to start directing my first features, which happened to be horror movies, because that's a genre I really love.
All right. Well, that actually kind of leads me right into the first thing I want to ask you is, what is your connection to horror? Like, what got you into horror and what keeps you in horror?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I really got into horror. I started getting into horror when I was younger because my brother was a big reader. He used to read a lot of Stephen King stuff, and I was kind of still more in that Goosebumps kind of camp. Like, he was a couple years older. And he would always rent a lot of horror movies that were a little bit too advanced for him, and probably a little definitely too advanced for me. And so, but he introduced me to a lot of like a lot of the, you know, like Friday 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween series and stuff like that. And then, but he would also, rent like the Chuds and like those sorts of movies, you know, and then he went at a certain point in to live with my mom, and I ended up still living with my dad, and I just kept watching horror movies. And then eventually I was able to find like, you know, the Evil Dead 2s and like, Dead Alive, Reanimator, like these sorts of very offbeat kind of horror films. And there was something so special about them. Like there was something, you know, like you really needed to kind of like understand, you know, like Dead Alive, you know, like, and there was something going on in it that wasn't just like, you know, the brutality of it. And you need to sit down and kind of understand it. And I started to tie that back to like Army of Darkness, and then put together that like, oh my God, this guy's going to direct a Spider-Man movie. And like all these things, and starting to kind of really, you know, it's the early days of the internet, and, you know, the IMDb came out, and you could start making these connections, and it became just this whole world opening up to me. And you get glimpses of it, you know, like you guys know Full Moon, obviously.
Yeah.
Like Charles Band used to do all those, like Video Zone things that were like on the end of all the old Full Moon releases, where you could see like the bunch of guys in Burbank, like, you know, making rubber monsters and just be like, people do that for their job. And then really starting to understand that, and being, you know, from a small town in Canada, like, you know, 5,000 people, no one really makes films. It was an interesting thing to kind of, you know, realize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so in 2017, you released your sophomore film, Tragedy Girls, which has become a cult classic. From your perspective, how has that film changed your career?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the better, mostly. You know, mm-hmm. like I love that film. I love that the whole process. I mean, like when you're making kind of your early films, the good thing about making a horror movie is the expectations are tremendously low. Like, you know, like especially mm-hmm. if you don't spend any money on them. And so my first movie, Patchwork, was like did well for the scale of movie it was. But it really the biggest thing to come out of it was getting the opportunity to make Tragedy Girls, and that had a very you know, unique set of producers on it. Like they were Kerry Rhodes was the main EP on it, who was kind of in charge of everything. And he came from like sports entertainment. Or sports, not really even entertainment. Like he was like, you know, like a free safety for the New York Jets, you know, like he was just like an NFL guy, and he just did well, you know, was responsible with his money and just really loves movies. And so he had optioned that script, Tragedy Girls, but it was not the same movie that we ended up making. Like, he just loved that title, and he thought the idea of making a slasher movie was fun. And so we ended up kind of pitching, like taking the very seed of just like that title and like a female fronted slasher film. And then we completely reconcepted it and then really kind of made it the more the subversive take on a slasher that it is. And he was really supportive of that. Like, he really saw the potential of it and allowed us to take some big swings that you don't normally get to take, and was supportive of us the whole time. And then we also, you know, like Terry Ainslie and Karen Van Hoy and Armin, who are all on that, like Armin and Tara now sort of run Fangoria and Fangoria Studios. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, you know, they were sort of starting their careers out as well, and they were big horror fans, and it was just kind of a good sort of confluence of event, you know, things. And we, you know, like Craig Robinson, like you know, really got the tone of the script and kind of came on as a producer and was super, you know, helpful. And even like Josh Hutcherson, like we had a number of people. And then even when we found like our young cast, like Brianna Hildebrand and Alex Shipp, have kind of gone on to do all sorts of other kind of fun things. And like Jack Quaid, you know, like like it was a good group of people that were all about to write or to kind of go on to something little bit, you know, more substantial. But I was able to sort of convince them to do this kind of bonkers horror movie around that time, and they all really bought into it.
Yeah,
which was pretty fun. So, and then just having that movie, like a premiere at like South by Southwest really kind of kick things off. And then, like, you know, the release, you know, I don't think was all it could have been. It ended up, you know, coming around, you know, being part of this sort of new wave of slashers.
Yeah. So that film definitely felt like a taking off point, right? But like, is there a film in your, you know, history that you are the most proud of, or would that be one of them just because of like kind of the impact it's had in your career?
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely quite proud of Tragedy Girls and like the group of people. But like largely, like a lot of the same collaborators I had just worked with on Patchwork, and those movies came out within 6 months of each other, you know, and so I'm more like, but we made Tragedy Girls, for, you know, a more like reasonable professional budget. Whereas Patchwork was like made for like peanuts, you know. And it's like, and like Pavel, who's was a cinematographer on it, who's you know, amazing, like he's gone on to do Hereditary and like the, you know, the Blue Beetle and Midsommar, and like, you know, like you know, was one of my good friends. But you know, we and Marlena Fear, who did production designer, did Tragedy Girls with me, and also, you know, did like The Wretched, and like, you know, a brilliant, you know, a production designer especially, and has done a lot of really kind of classic like genre movies in the last couple of years. You know, a lot of, you know, those people all did that movie for nothing, you know, like, and so I'm most proud of that, because it really sort of firmed up that, like, you know, you can, or that I, you know, that I could do this, and that we could all do this as sort of a group. And then after that, it really kind of felt like it was off to the races more than the difference between Tragedy Girls and being able to jump to more kind of larger indie stuff.
Right. Very cool.
And me and Dave, we always talk about, you know, the VHS franchise. We're big fans of it. How was it for you to be a part of VHS 99?
I love VHS. Like when that movie came out, like I was just finishing film school. It was like that, like Sundance. It was like the hottest thing in horror for. And then it's been so interesting to see those guys like Radio Silence and Avant Garde and all, like all those guys kind of go on to do, like Ty West, like all those guys go on to do like all these bigger things and really kind of redefine the genre, but then also continue to find those kind of like younger voices. And so to get that call was really I was really pumped because you know, I'd be a big fan of that franchise. And I love also, like, you know, like growing up, I loved like Creepshow and, you know, Twilight Zone and such things. Yeah. I like the idea of doing like a little anthology section. And you know, I had a little bit of the burden of doing the wraparound segment, or rather, so that always has a little bit of weird baggage because you kind of need to, you know, recalibrate to kind of make the whole thing work.
Yeah.
Which has its a different set of challenges. But again, like, they have a ton of support for us, like Chad over at Radio Silence and Dave Bruckner in particular, were, you know, kind of helped me figure it out and try and make 99 what it could be.
Nice. And myself and Dave, we were also just talking with a few other guests about like gateway horror films. I have seen that your name's also attached to the new film Five Nights at Freddy's that's getting ready to release. What was your role in that film?
So we were brought on to it a couple of years ago. Like myself and Chris Lee Hill, who's my writing partner. And the idea was we were going to rewrite the script and then I was going to direct it. And so we were on that for a couple of years. And then, you know, we tried a bunch of different kind of versions of it, you know, working very closely with Scott to try and, get what's in his head on screen, something that, you know, he's very, has a good beat of like what the fans kind of love and about the franchise and also figuring out, like, it's a video game that's, you know, somewhat it has challenges to adapt. There's, you know, the series was pretty big at that point. I think they had like 11 games or something, and there's toys and there's, you know, hundreds of characters. And we tried to put a frame around that to figure out, you know, like what could be an exciting way to do this. And, you know, and some of those choices, you know, like remained, and, you know, we ended up with like a shared story credit. And, but I'm, you know, ultimately didn't have, you know, much to do with the actual production, you know, like, you know, we wish them the best, and I'm excited to see what Emma did with it. I mean, I think she's amazingly talented, and, you know, I'm supposed to see it later today. So I'm kind of pumped.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Very cool. So let's talk It's a Wonderful Knife. Tyler, could you give our audience, just like a brief synopsis of what the film's about?
Yeah, so it's a wonderful life. Or, geez, it's a wonderful knife. Every time I run through that sentence, I'm always just like,
yeah.
It's a Wonderful Knife is about a young woman named Winnie who survives a brutal attack on Christmas Eve, and then 1 year later, she's unable to process her trauma from that experience, and starts to kind of spiral. And in a moment of weakness, makes this wish that she was never born, or maybe things would be better if she was never born. And then she kind of finds herself in this nightmare version of her hometown, where this killer that she had stopped is never caught. And now she must, find a new way to stop him and kind of solve this mystery so that she can return to her own reality before it's too late.
Yeah. Nice. that's a pretty good summary right there. Winnie, why Winnie?
Oh, why the name Winnie?
Yeah.
Oh, that was in the script. I mean, we got to ask Michael. Okay.
All right. I was curious. Like, yeah, it's just Winnie Cooper reference right there. I don't know.
Maybe. There's definitely a little bit of name game going on. Less that made it into the actual movie. Like sometimes, like people put, one of the weird things you'll know that is one of my pet peeves is like sometimes like casting notices and stuff have last names, and then those get put on IMDb. And even though it's not in the movie,
yeah,
people like give you shit about last names of characters that never get spoken or even are not in the movie at all. And they're just like, because they just Googled it.
Yeah.
And it shows up, you know, whatever. Like it's anyway, that's
ridiculous. Yeah. So let me ask you a question. Cause over the past number of years, holiday horror films have just like been booming. They're super popular. We're definitely getting way more than what we used to get back in the day. Why do you think holiday horror films have become so popular?
I think because, you know, it's a high stakes emotional time, you know, and I also think that horror fans, you know, like they watch movies at Christmas, you know, like it makes the survey, like horror is working every other time of the year, when not Christmas. But there's also just inherent fun with the juxtaposition between like that cheery kind of imagery and like, you know, mayhem.
Yeah.
So the film made its world premiere at Beyond Fest back in October. What was the experience like? Did you end up going to check out the film with the fans?
I love Beyond Fest. Like I've been going every year since it started. So like I mean I'm based in LA, and I um That it's watching that festival kind of grow has been really great. And now it's, I think, the biggest genre festival in the United States, like it's just in terms of bodies through the door. But they've grown into like a really great audience, and are kind of an example of what I love about the horror audience in general is they always kind of like lean in. They're always like, they're excited to sit down and watch a movie. They want to love it, you know? And it's just a very accepting audience that is open to seeing something new and wants to be blown away. So I had a lot of fun. It was a really kind of magical night for everybody. And especially coming off of COVID, like, you know, there's a lot of, we lost film festivals for a couple of years there. And it was really weird to roll out a movie because you couldn't sit down and enjoy it the way it was meant to be, you know, with other people. And so a lot of our younger cast hadn't really even been to like a traditional premiere, like in some of them. So it was cool to see that or sort of re-experience some of that stuff through their eyes because they were just pumped.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
So when I first heard about this project and I saw the names attached to it, I was like, all right, we're in for something great. How was it putting this cast together?
It was a careful process. I mean, I love casting, but you have to be careful about it. And I like to be really cognizant of the group dynamics and like how these energies kind of bump off each other. Once we found Jane as our lead, I'd seen them in Yellow Jackets and had them kind of on a list of young performers that I was excited to work with, and they did like such a great kind of read of one of the scenes that was sort of a tough one to kind of thread the emotional needle of, where you need to sort of bite the bullet of this like supernatural premise, but at the same time be a little funny about it, but then you be very sincere in the type of emotions you're having and go this kind of real gamut. And they just really got it and pulled it off in spades. And so I thought they'd be a nice kind of rock to kind of anchor the movie with. So I met with them and decided to kind of build the cast around kind of what Jane was doing. And then that then it became about trying to find like the best Bernie to kind of counterweight, which was very difficult. We found like, we probably looked the most people that we could we looked at hundreds of tapes for that. And at both sides of the border. And then ultimately ended up with finding Jess McCloud, who I thought brought the right type of eccentric energy. And then was, I thought would be a really kind of fun foil to Jane. And then once we got them together, like they had really good chemistry and that really kind of changed the whole trajectory of the movie. And whereas like, you know, Joel and Justin, like Justin sort of came on and we're, we wanted a bigger villain and he came on kind of late. Like he came on like closer to production and we sort of bounced around ideas, about like, cause he was in the discussion early, but he was on Goosebumps and weren't sure if the schedule would work out and stuff.
Okay.
And, ultimately it did, but he came in with like just a ton of ideas about like, you know, who this guy was and like how big he could go with the performance and like, you know, like the different look and things like that. And it was about more kind of like, he has too many good ideas and you have to kind of shape it down. So it's just the world of the movie. But just, you know, a ton of energy. And then, Joel, is also kind of, being played a little bit differently than he normally is, you know, like he's such a titan of comedy, but he's just like a really great dramatic actor. And so we wanted to play, to kind of slow play him a little bit on the comedic front. And he kind of defers to a lot of the younger cast and like is more like playing a position. But then he gets to do some more dramatic stuff as the script goes on. And I think he liked the weirdness of that. So it was fun to kind of put those together. And then we just filled out the rest of the cast with, you know, like Katie Isabel, who was kind of amazing. And obviously from Ginger Snaps and like Freddy versus Jason, American Mary. And, you know, was really our only choice for Aunt Gail, who's because she was just so good. We tried to squeak in some people like William B. Davis, you know, like from the X-Files, you know, I just watched it in Toronto and there was like three people who were like, yeah, you know, like, they got their fans out there.
Nice. So one of the things that I think was done well here is, I mean, this is very much a horror film with comedy versus a comedy with some horror elements of horror, which I feel like that was probably somewhat tough to do, to make sure that both kind of elements were able to shine through, especially with having such like a comedic cast. So how did you kind of ensure that the horror aspect was not going to be drowned out by comedy?
I think it was on the script level. Like I definitely, with Tragic Girls, I would say it's like 60-40 comedy horror, whereas this was more like 70-30 the other direction.
Yes.
Yeah. We did talk about that. We kind of got around it was in Tragic Girls, everything's sort of structured, like we started building to a joke. Whereas on this, like when the when the killer shows up, it's serious, you know, and so and brutal and short and like it was more of a structural choice that they kind of like we sort of decided it was going to be more horror, at least more sincere, and then the comedy comes from character and it's much more kind of sprinkled in, and the reactions are absurd and things like that that are kind of make it fun. Yeah. And it allowed the performers to sort of define their kind of comedy rather than the story itself serving the comedy in a way that would overpower the horror.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so, I think that's probably because of the nature of, like, we had to be, you know, it's a Christmas horror comedy, you know, like, so it's like it had that flavor. We needed to, you know, be a large featuring ingredient.
Yeah.
Yeah. So writer Michael Kennedy, who was also known for his film Freaky, also wrote It's a Wonderful Knife. What was it like to bring this Christmas horror theme film to life?
I was really fortunate that Michael, you know, kind of trusted me to do it. You know, like I said, like I make things that are a little bit more cynical a lot of the time. And so the fact that he was kind of, you know, had the foresight to look at, you know, the type of tools that I have in my toolbox and was like, no, you can probably do this. Mm-hmm. It's great because he was a producer on this, and this is his first project as a producer. And so he was there like every day on set, and was a great collaborator kind of throughout. But at the same time was very, you know, like, supportive when we started, you know, like when we lose locations or when we lose, like, we have fewer shooting days and we have to consolidate things. And I was trying to kind of protect the story, and you always kind of can scale down and you feel like you're getting crushed in a box. And he was always up for another little pass of things or up for shooting the shit and trying to figure spitballing, you know, how we're going to make this work. And it's good to have somebody like right there with you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Tyler, I know that you have to get going. You have probably plenty more of these to do to spread the word about It's a Wonderful Knife. But thank you for stopping by here and speaking to us about the project and letting us check it out. We really enjoyed it. So thank you so much for that.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys taking the time. It was really good to chat a bit. And I really love those collections that are behind you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
True fan, true horror fan. I love that. Everybody, make sure you check out It's a Wonderful Knife November 10th in theaters on Shudder or AMC Plus or wherever you rent movies, and be sure to, you know, follow Tyler and whatever else he has coming next, because I can guarantee one thing, it's definitely going to be something fun and entertaining. So thank you everybody, and have a great night.
See you guys.